Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Once again, my friends, time for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday, podcast1.com, and of course, Apple Podcasts. Thank you for subscribing and listening every week and checking out the podcast. And it's great to be here with you on this Thursday. If you're listening on post day, the 28th of November, 2019 is the day that this podcast posts, and it is significant for those of us in the U.S., because today is Thanksgiving. So to all of my American audience, a very healthy, happy Thanksgiving Thursday to each and every one of you. A big extended weekend for many. So in America, big four-day weekend. Just about everybody gets the Friday off after Thanksgiving. Not everybody, but a lot of people do as part of the holiday weekend. So it's a nice long weekend. It's just such a great holiday, and hope everybody has a chance to spend it with family and friends and enjoy whatever it is that you are doing if you are indeed in America and celebrating a Thanksgiving weekend. I often think about this time of year because although it is a joyous, wonderful four-day weekend for many, if you work in the retail sector, it's anything but. And I know that because for years I worked in a record store. And for years, I was traumatized with the prospect of having to go to work on the Friday after Thanksgiving, universally known as Black Friday, and deal with the insane amount of people and customers that converge on stores and malls on that Friday. To say it left trauma, I think I have PTSD from the Black Fridays I worked. So just a word of advice to people who do go out shopping on that day, and God bless you if you do. I don't know how you do it. But if you do, go easy on the people working. Don't get caught up in the mania. Don't buy into the door buster verbiage that's thrown around. I don't know. Call me crazy. The prospect of busting through doors and fighting people in doorbuster sales, it never quite appealed to me on how to spend a holiday weekend. But hey, whatever you're into, take it slow, take it easy on those folks that do need to work, some of them having to wake up at an ungodly early hour to be there to deal with the volume of customers on that Friday. I will be nowhere near malls over the holiday weekend. But whatever it is you do, have fun. And hey, if you want to watch some cool TV, you might want to check out Pluto TV. They are the leading free streaming television service. And who doesn't love to stream free stuff? You can watch over 100 TV channels, thousands of movies on demand, all completely free. Pluto TV, they never ask for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up to watch for free. That's because Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and your hit movies for free. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV. You can download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today, including your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, and anywhere else you stream. So what we have for you today is another great interview that comes courtesy of, like all of my interviews, just about everyone, my daily show on Sirius XM Radio, Trunk Nation, which you can hear each and every day, Monday through Friday, live on Volume, channel 106, between 2 and 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and replaying every night, 10 to midnight Eastern, and anytime you want, on demand on the Sirius XM app, where there is also a bunch of video of the interviews that you hear on my Sirius XM show, and a few that you hear right here on this podcast. The way it works, folks, is I'm on every day on Sirius XM talking rock with you and doing interviews, and I cherry pick one or two and post them for you here on the podcast. But if you're only listening to the podcast, you're getting a tiny, tiny sample of what I'm doing on a daily basis on Sirius XM. So that being said, if you're in the U.S. and Canada, please join me and become a subscriber. As a matter of fact, you can hear Trunk Nation on Sirius XM right now if you're in the U.S. and Canada, totally free, even if you aren't a subscriber, because they're in a free listening period until, I think, December 1st. So if you have an inactive radio, or if you'd like to go to the app or SiriusXM.com, everything is wide open and free for you to listen. So you can actually sample for free my daily show on Sirius XM 106. Now keep in mind, it is a holiday, so some of the programming might be a little bit different. But starting on Monday, we'll be back live starting at 2 p.m. Eastern time, and there's still the usual programming and the usual slots. So be sure to check it out. Great opportunity to sample it for free if you're in the U.S. or Canada right now. Free listening period is happening. I am getting ready, and I want to thank, I heard from a few folks, I'm going to Switzerland, folks. I'm going to Zurich, actually next week. And it's a pretty long story. I think I touched on it on this show in the last couple of weeks, but I was supposed to be going to Switzerland for a surprise party for Billy Gibbons that was canceled. They were nice enough to invite me to this huge bash, and then the party, for reasons completely not fully known, was canceled. So I had the plane tickets and figured, what the hell? So I'm going with my family, never been there before. Ironically, the one band I know from Switzerland, Crocus, is actually playing in Zurich when I'm there. Although I don't know if I'll be breaking free from family obligations to go to Crocus, but hey, you never know. So that should be quite an experience, and I'll tell you about it when I do a podcast when I get back. I'm going to have to front load a couple, but I'm only going for like 4 or 5 days. I have very little experience going to Europe. I've been to England 4 or 5 times in my life. Outside of that, though, nothing. Never to France, Germany, Italy, certainly Switzerland, none of it. So this will be a fun experience and a rare trip that I get to take with the family. So looking forward to that. Some stuff coming up before we get to our interview. December 14th, well, a few things. This I can announce right now. So you know I do these monthly broadcasts from the Rainbow on the Sirius XM show. We call it the Trunk Nation LA Invasion. The next one's going to be a little different. It will happen at the Rainbow. It will be free and open to the public. It will be live 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific as usual, and it will be broadcast live on Sirius XM volume. However, this time around, because it's December, we want to do a Christmas party. So I want this one to be a lot more loose, a lot more fun, maybe put some of the audience on the air, have a variety of different guests just dropping by and dropping in, have some prizes, maybe even have a Santa giving away some CDs. It's going to be a really fun, festive event. I hope you come and join me for it if you're in Southern California. It'll take place on December 12th. That's a Thursday night from the Rainbow in L.A. on the patio. The first ever Trunk Nation Christmas party, folks. Broadcast live on Volume across America and Canada, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific. Everybody can listen to whatever mayhem ensues. And if you're in L.A., mark the date. Come down. No admission, no ticket, no list. Just come join us December 12th at the Rainbow, the next Trunk Nation L.A. invasion. And this time around, it is our first of what I hope will be a great Christmas party event for December, our final broadcast for 2019 from the Rainbow Bar and Grill. December 12th is the date. December 14th, I am in Erlanger, Kentucky, which I'm told is just outside of Cincinnati, and I'll be there at Peacock's doing a speaking show, again, December 14th. And December 20th, checking my own calendar right now just to make sure that I've given you the right dates. Yes, I am. December 14th, Erlanger, Kentucky, which is basically Cincinnati, at Peacock's for a speaking Q&A show. The final appearance for the year, December 20th, Clifton, New Jersey, the annual That Metal Show Christmas party at Dingbats. Great time, music, hang, drinks, fun. Come join us December 20th. You know it, you love it. If you're in the Jersey, New York area, December 20th, Dingbats, Don, Jim, myself, the annual TMS Christmas bash. All right, there's your rundown. Everything is on eddietrunk.com. Please follow on Twitter at Eddie Trunk and Instagram at Eddie Trunk as well. The interview I have for you on this Thanksgiving Thursday is an incredibly moving and powerful interview that I was very happy to be able to do. This interview took place a little less than 2 weeks ago from the Sirius XM studios in LA when I was out there for the last LA invasion. And it is with Quiet Riot drummer Frankie Benali. If you know Frankie's story, you know already why I'm saying it is moving and powerful. Frankie Benali announced a few weeks ago that he has been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. I reached out to Frankie when I knew I was going to be in LA, asked him if he'd be open to coming on the radio show and talking about what he's going through. Remarkably, he is still playing shows. He has a great spirit about him, a great drive and a determination to beat this, and I am hoping and praying that he truly does. I've known Frankie Benali for a very long time. A great guy, always a very warm, nice guy. We've had some great times over the years. I hope for many more to come. Frankie came in and did this interview directly from getting his latest chemo. As a matter of fact, he was getting chemo at the time of the interview, as you're about to hear, through a pack that was on his belt. This is about as serious as cancer gets, what Frankie is dealing with, and the way he is handling it is truly, truly incredible. And you will hear the whole story and hear some stuff about music and his prognosis and how he's bringing the two together, where he's still very much playing and performing while still getting these treatments. So with nothing but the best of thoughts and prayers out to Frankie, as he is in a tremendous battle here, but handling it brilliantly. And let's hope for a great outcome for him. So I am very, very honored and pleased to be able to bring you this interview with Frankie Benali, talking about all of what he is dealing with on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast coming up.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, really pumped to be welcoming Hot Boxin' with Mike Tyson to the Podcast One family. Listen as Mike Tyson, the baddest man on the planet, pours his soul into conversations with fascinating minds, celebrities, and athletes, along with his cosmic millennial sidekick and former NFLer Eben Britton. Kid Dynamite dives deep into the issues impacting us all today. This podcast will change the way you see the world. Don't miss Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. And without further ado, let's get to our interview this week. It is with Quiet Riot drummer Frankie Benali talking about his recent diagnosis of pancreatic cancer, as well as some music stuff. And he even brought me some Kit Kats from Japan. Enjoy Frankie Benali on this week's podcast. It is wonderful to see you, my friend, Frankie Benali. How are you?
Always great to see you, my brother.
You too, man. I said, did the rain mess you up a little bit? But you're like, nah, the rain was fine.
I like the rain. It's like being in Long Island.
How many years you lived in L.A. now?
The first time I came out was in 72. Didn't get anything, actually 75, and didn't get much accomplished. Went back east, regrouped, and then came back out again. But I've been here mostly since 1975.
What brought you here in 72? Just chasing the dream as a musician?
Yeah, I mean, for me, in the music business, there was only two places to do music, New York or L.A., and the weather was much better in L.A. if you're going to be couch surfing.
Yeah, so, exactly. You know, yeah. So when you came out in 72, nothing, no connections, no nothing, you just, let me go out and see what I could find?
Yeah, I came out, and I packed very light. But nothing was going on. When I came in 75, I came with my 1969 Green Ludwig drum set, and I had taken the drum heads off and put all my clothes inside of it, and I had $300 to my name, and I get to LAX, and I'm in the white zone, you know, no parking, white zone, sitting on my cases trying to figure out what I'm going to do next, and a van from SIR passed by and put on the brakes, and the guy backed up and he gets out and he goes, Frankie? I said, Greg? And it was a guy that I knew that was now working for SIR, and he goes, what you doing? And I told him. And he goes, all right, we'll store your drums at SIR, or you can sleep on my couch.
Wow.
And it started from that.
What was your first paying gig as a drummer?
My first paying gig as a drummer, I was 14 years old. I put a band together called The Pound of Flesh.
This is in New York?
Yeah, in Astoria, Queens, and we played a church social. We made $13 a piece. The first dollar to hit my hand, my right hand, I put in my pocket, and the other $12 I put in the left pocket. And then the next morning, I went to the Five and Dime, bought a cheap frame, and framed that first dollar, and I still have it sitting in my office in the same shitty frame.
Wow. What was your first gig that you landed when you got to L.A.? Because you played on some things that I don't think a lot of people realize. Like it's you on Money Money, Billy Idol, right?
Correct. Yeah, and Baby Talk.
Okay, so you're Billy Idol, and also the Hughes Thrall album.
Yeah,
that's you on a bunch of that too, right?
Yeah, but that came later. My first time I was actually on a tour bus and went out on the road is Robert Fleischman, who had recently left as the vocalist for Germany.
Right.
For Journey, had gotten a record deal with Arista. And he used all studio musicians for the record, but wanted to use, you know, live players. And I came and auditioned, and I was out with him for that entire tour, which was basically opening up for Van Halen. It might have been the Diver Down tour.
Oh, wow.
So that was my first time. And then we came, that was in 79.
What was that band called?
Robert Fleischman, Perfect Stranger.
Wow. Okay.
And then I came back to L.A. and I went to see Quiet Riot at the Starwood, and I'm upstairs, you know, and I've had quite a few drinks in me, and this guy comes up to me and he goes, "Are you Frankie Benali?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "I'm Nick St. Nicholas from Steppenwolf. Call me tomorrow." He gave me a piece of paper with his name and number, and I called him up, and he told me to get, I think it was Live Wolf album, and learn it, and I did. And he called me up for a rehearsal, and I went up to his house for rehearsal, and we rehearsed. It sounded great, and he says, "Okay, you leave next week. We're leaving tomorrow." And I said, "Huh?" He goes, "Yeah, we're gonna fire our drummer on the road."
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, I didn't realize you played in Steppenwolf.
Almost 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, 79 to 80. Yeah.
What were your thoughts? So you went to see Quiet Riot, obviously, with Randy and the original band, right?
Early, yeah, I'd on. Get on the guest list, and everybody bought me drinks, so it was a no-brainer.
What were your thoughts seeing that version of the band? Were you a fan, I imagine?
Well, at this point, Kelly Garney was already out of the band. He wasn't playing bass anymore, and Rudy Sarzo was playing bass. Now, Rudy and I had met in 1972 because on November 17th, my local garage band, a three-piece called Ginger, opened up for David Bowie at Pirates World for one show on the Ziggy Stardust tour. And unbeknownst to me, Rudy and his brother Robert Sarzo were out in the audience. Now, the next day is the 18th, November 18th. That was Rudy's birthday. So I went to this club called The Flying Machine, and then Rudy went to the club called Flying Machine, and he comes up to me, and the bass player and I look similar, so he thought I was the bass player, and he's going on telling me, you know, how much he loved the drummer, and I was just reeling it all in. And then when he was done, I put my hand out, and I said, by the way, I'm the drummer, Frankie Vannelli, and he turned around and walked away. That's how we met.
One other thing about early history I always wanted to ask you. Money Money by Billy Idol is to this day like a classic rock staple. It's played everywhere, in every nightclub they play it, and everywhere. How did you how did it come to be that you cut the drums on that?
I received a call. To this day, I don't know how Keith Forsey, Billy's producer, got my phone number. I think another producer recommended him to me, because after the fact, he told me, I heard that you're real professional. You learn the material, you cut fast, and you leave. And I said, yeah, that's pretty accurate. So I met Billy, and we went to the Rainbow and had a couple of drinks, and we're discussing not even music, we're discussing films that we both enjoyed. And the next day went into the studio, and it took 45 minutes to get the drum sound, 30 minutes to cut the track. And they said, it was great, can you do some more? And I said, I have time for one more, because I was double booked. I was booked to go into the studio with Roy Thomas Baker that evening to cut production demos for J.C. Crowley, who used to be in Player.
Oh, wow. Wow, yeah. Wow, wow. Was there ever a side of you that there's all these drummers that are unbelievable session guys, and they go in and they cut the track, and you know, sometimes you don't even know they're on the record, and or even any musicians. I mean, it's a guy like Steve Lukather, all these guys that are just the pros that go in, they do it, and they're very comfortable making a great living doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, the hired guns, behind the scenes sort of guys. It sounds like you could have very well went down that road if it hadn't been for joining Quiet Riot. Was that of interest to you, or were you always a guy that wanted to really be out there on the stage and be recognized?
Well, I enjoy both sides of it. I enjoy being in the studio under the microscope, because it's very unforgiving. But I differ with a lot of studio drummers, whereas a lot of studio drummers will learn the entire thing, you know, from top to bottom, and they will play that the same way every time. I will learn the entire song and all the signposts that need to be fixed. But what happens in between those spots, I leave it to spontaneity. Otherwise, it becomes sterile to me. Mm. So it's got to have a feel, it's got to have a pocket, it's got to have a groove. Otherwise, it just becomes mechanical. The other side of the coin is I love performing live, because what you get back from the audience is what spurs you on, you know, to do your very best.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, so you walk in here and you give me this. I didn't want to open it until we were on the air, but you give me this very nice Christmas bag here with a bow on it. And I'm going to open this for the first time here. Frankie,
please do. Brought,
now, I just realized, and I missed it, and I apologize for missing it. I should be giving you a gift, because it was your birthday the other day.
That's okay. I've had plenty of gifts in my life.
So, well, happy belated to you.
Thank you.
So this is from Japan.
Yep.
Just what I need, the big chooch I am. You're giving me candy?
Yeah, but look at the flavors.
Kit Kat. What is it? Kit Kat with Japanese lettering on it. Hold on. What is the flavor? I can't read it. It's in Japanese.
Let me see this one.
Frankie gave me a bag of candy. Just what I need, Frankie. I appreciate it, but I'm looking through this. Oh, wait, what is this? Kit Kat. It looks like green tea?
Green tea flavored, yeah.
Wow, and this is...
That might be sake flavored.
Sake? Wow. Or it looks like a cantaloupe.
Oh, yeah. That's the cantaloupe flavored one.
This is peach.
Peach, yeah.
Well, you got a whole bag? It's like Halloween all over again here,
there
man.
You go.
Thank you. These are for me.
Those are all yours.
Wow. You are too kind. These are really cool. Is that a thing in Japan, like different flavored Kit Kats?
Yeah, they're crazy about it. They have their own stores and stands, and then they're also in department stores, and they do certain flavors at a certain time of the year that you can't ever get again.
Really?
Yeah.
My kids will love this, too. I'm going to take some of these home, because they're all about stuff from other countries. Now, you were just in Japan. So let's get into it. So I was here a couple weeks ago, and I ran into Chuck Wright.
Mm-hmm.
right on outside of the whiskey on the sidewalk. And I had reached out to you when the news came out about your illness. Mm-hmm. And I know you were dealing with a ton of stuff, but your voicemail was full. And I had texted you a couple of times. I texted Regine. I said, please let Frankie know. I'm thinking of him, anything I could do. I know how much you were dealing with when you made that announcement.
Sure.
I ran into Chuck on the sidewalk on Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing when I saw him, I said, how's Frankie? I tried to reach him. I haven't heard from him. I said, I know he's dealing with a lot, but I'm concerned. And he said, oh, Frankie's going to Japan to play. He goes, we just played here at the Whiskey a couple nights ago and he played.
Yeah.
And now he's going to Japan to play with Mr. Jimmy doing a Zeppelin show. I go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
The same Frankie that just announced he's ill, you know, seriously ill. He goes, oh, yeah, he's still playing. He's playing great. He played in Whiskey. He's going to Japan. He's going to Japan.
Yeah.
And that made me feel really good to know that you were feeling well enough to do all of that. But talk about what you just – obviously, you brought me this candy. You just came from Japan,
mm-hmm.
and you did a Zeppelin show there with the guitar player from Jason Bonham's band, right?
Jimmy Sakurai, with his band, Mr. Jimmy. And for the last few years, I go over to Japan once or twice a year and do the Mr. Jimmy shows over there. So the last one we did was the recreation, 3.5 hour recreation, the 1977 LA Forum show, top to bottom. And the amazing thing is the X Theater is technologically the most amazing place when it comes to acoustics, so much so that my understanding is Sony Records goes there and plays masters for approval. And when we were doing sound check, you know, I went out in the audience in various spots and up into the balcony, and it sounded exactly the same in every seat. But the Japanese are so so technically perfect in what they do that the X Theater has all these amazing state-of-the-art LED lights,
mm-hmm.
but in 1977, those didn't exist. So they brought in 275 Parkhands on scaffolds, just like Led Zeppelin did. And the drum riser moved up to the front of the stage for the drum solo, and concussion bombs and everything went off. And so we did that, and now I'm scheduled to go back. I'm playing a show with Choir Riot in the St. Louis area on the 27th of November. Then I go in for chemo round 9 on December 3rd. December 16th, I leave for Tokyo. I return the 22nd from Tokyo, and I leave the 29th for Michigan to play the last show of the year with Choir Riot.
Wow. Amazing. Now, we should tell people, when you walked into the studio mm-hmm. just now, you, as we speak, you are getting chemo, correct?
Yeah. The way the chemo works now is you go into the hospital, as I did yesterday morning, and from the time we walked in, checked out, it was almost 6 hours, and that's the first step of the chemo. Then as soon as that's done, they take that same chemo formula, and they put it in a pump. And so I'm wearing this, you know, this fanny bag, not as a fashion statement.
All right, Frankie goes, this isn't a fashion statement. It's actually doing something.
Yeah, but if you can see here are the lines, that yellow fluid that you see going through the line goes to a port that's in my chest here.
Mm-hmm.
And then this thing that looks like a vein
mm-hmm.
isn't a vein. That's an actual tube that mm-hmm. goes to an artery in my neck. And then another tube goes to my heart. And so the chemo is constantly being pumped through my entire body, through my heart. It's using that as a propulsion. So I am now here doing your interview, because I love you, on chemo 8, day 2.
Wow. How do you feel? Do you, I mean, everybody, look, cancer has touched, if not anyone directly, there's not a person you can find, a family member, someone close, a loved one or something. I've mm-hmm. certainly had it in my family and all that. And you hear people have differing feelings about how they feel. You seem really obviously there, and you seem like you have that same great energy and spirit mm-hmm. about you. How do you physically feel right now?
Well, after doing 7 rounds of chemo, the reason we stopped at 7 about 2.5 months ago, because I had gone down to 135 pounds, and my oncologist felt that I was too weak to go on to the next level. And during that period of time, I had 2 tubes that were inserted into my side, because I had some fluid that was leaking from various areas into my abdominal cavity that was being caused by the tumor in my pancreas and the tumor in my liver, pushing on different organs. What that meant was that I couldn't eat any solid foods because the tumor was pushing down and wouldn't allow me to get any food into my stomach. So I went down to 135 pounds.
What did you weigh?
On April 17th, when I was diagnosed, I was a very healthy 1977 John Bonham, 197 pounds.
Okay.
And went down to 135. Mm-hmm. And so they tried to put a stent valve in, which would have made it possible for me to eat solid foods and for it to get into my stomach and the intestines and all of that. And after three tries, they just couldn't do it. And so the doctor, when I came out of anesthesia from surgery, I said, "So are we good?" And he goes, "No, we couldn't get past the blockage." And I said, "Am I going to have to be wearing this tube and this bag for the rest of my life?" And he goes, "Yeah, it's likely." And I said, "No, I don't accept that. I'm going to stop treatment because this is a very poor quality of life." And he says, "Well, hold on." And he left and had a meeting with his surgeons. And he came back and he goes, "We're going to try one more thing." And it was literally a Hail Mary play. I had been to the hospital since 9 in the morning that day going through all of this. It's now 6 o'clock in the evening. They roll me back into surgery. And by 9:15, when I came out of anesthesia, he says they were able to put the stent in. So in due course, the tube was removed and I've been able to start eating food.
And do you have, now going to Japan is not across the street.
Yeah.
And you got Quiet Riot gigs. You're going back to Japan. You've got a lot. You have now the energy and the stamina to do that. You have the energy and stamina to play a full show. No problem.
Yeah.
It hasn't impacted your playing or your wind or anything.
No, here's the strange thing. Like there's so many side effects that come along with chemo and side effects get added on to you as you do more chemotherapy. And the recovery time is a bit longer each time. The amazing thing is that right now I have no feeling in my fingertips and no feeling in my toes. And I sit behind the drums and everything works flawlessly.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. I don't question it for fear that if I question
right,
it.
Right.
Yeah, but it's been great. No, you know, I did the whiskey show, which is the one that I did a week after I went public with the disease. And you know, timing was great. Energy was great.
You played the whole show.
Yeah. Power was great. No mistakes. All the correct things that you know, Chuck and Alex and Jizzy Pearl are used to hearing that the sub drummers I got over the summer just didn't get. It was a great experience.
Talk about the decision to go public with this, because how long had you known and been dealing with it before? Because I started getting calls to this show that people went to see Quiet Riot mm-hmm. and saying Frankie wasn't there.
Right.
And I figured, okay, there's a conflict. Or quite honestly, I figured maybe Frankie's trying to pull like the Foreigner Mick Jones deal where right. he just doesn't want to go out to every show and he's going to get somebody else and give them its blessings and whatever. And then, of course, the news came out that you were battling pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. How long had you been dealing with it before going public with it?
Over 3 months. Yeah, what happened, I was diagnosed. The series of events is I was going to play a couple of songs with Alex's side project, Hookers and Blow, mm-hmm. For the Rainbow Parking Lot gig. And this was in April. So I went to my storage unit to get some supplies, and while I was there, all of a sudden my calf was in a ridiculous amount of pain. I couldn't figure it out on my right foot, and I got to drive back home. So I barely made it the drive back home. It was that painful.
The first symptom was in your calf, you said?
Yeah, in my calf. So what happened is, my wife, suggested I get in touch with Kaiser. I couldn't get an appointment for a couple of days.
It's a hospital here.
Yes.
Okay.
And the next morning I got up and I walked 10 feet and I couldn't go any further and I was out of breath and I was really weak. So Regina, and rightfully so, insisted that I go to emergency. So I went to emergency and they did an ultrasound of my right calf and they did a scan of my upper. And what it showed was that I had a blood clot in my right calf. Blood clot in my left lung, right lung, and in the saddle in between the two lungs. The concern was if they dislodge, they only take two routes. One, to your brain, aneurysm, end of story. The other one to your heart, heart attack, end of story. A byproduct of the scan caught a little bit of my liver, and they saw something that didn't look right. So now this is 3:30 in the morning. I'm still at ER, and they wheel me back into the scan. They scan the lower, and about an hour later, about 4:30 in the morning, the floor surgeon or the floor doctor in emergency comes in and unceremoniously says, you have stage 4 pancreatic cancer that has metastasized to your liver, and I really like your music. And he signed off on the paperwork and walked out.
Oh, my God. Talk about bedside manner, huh?
Yeah, that's how I found out. So my first concern was, you know, how do I call? I don't want to wake. I had sent Regina home about 1:30 in the morning because she had been with me all day. So my first concern is, how do I tell my wife? My second concern is, how do I take care of Quiet Riot? So I decided not to go public at that point because I didn't want to. At that point, all I knew is that I had, you know, what they consider terminal cancer. And they gave me 6 months, which initially meant that the middle of October, I would probably have died. So I didn't want to go public.
As in a month ago.
Yeah. So I didn't want to go public with just bad news. So my first consideration was, okay, well, let's see where this goes, because I'm refusing to accept that I'm going to be dying in you know, 6 months, even though I started, you know, making arrangements just in the event, because you don't know, but I refuse to accept it. My second consideration is, and this is now April, I actually, after I was diagnosed, I flew to Florida and did a festival day with Quiet Riot, you know, against my doctor's orders, because of flying and the altitude and the blood clots. And then in May, I did the M3 Festival on May 5th. But after that, it just became impossible to travel. So now we're going into the summer months and, you know, Quiet Riot had a full calendar. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, I can't go, but how do I take care of my guys? You know, they all have expenses, they have families and everything.
Right.
So I got in touch with my agent, Mark Hyman at ATI, and you know, we discussed having the band go out with substitute drummers. There were some promoters that, you know, were concerned that I had to talk off the ledge. We only lost two shows with the...
Were those promoters aware of why, or did you just say you couldn't play the date?
No, initially they were not aware of why, because no matter how much you say, you know, this is private information,
right,
you know, it's going to be, it's the internet, it's going to be out there. But by and large, we're able to talk the rest of them off the ledge. There was one promoter that's a longtime friend for about 30 years that he's the one that put on the Heavy Montreal Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And I was straight up front, you know, with him.
The reason why I ask that question is because if you're a promoter and you're told Frankie Benali can't play, just, well, he just doesn't want to show up, or
right,
because he's battling cancer.
Right.
I would think there'd be a different approach, you know, different, oh, let's try to help out here. Let's take mm-hmm. the date. Frankie, get better. Send us who your sub is. Let's go.
Sure.
Versus, you know, if somebody just, you know, because you know there's a lot of that out there now with a lot
yeah.
of bands that just, it's just guys not showing up, or they don't want to do it. They want to stay home and just run it. And there's a lot of that. So that's would definitely be a different, I think, read on it if mm-hmm. you knew what was going on. But I also understand you not wanting to, because well, you're right. No matter who, it's going to get out there.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been playing the, and rightfully so, the sympathy card. But the problem is that, let's say, promoter so-and-so gets off the phone and happens to say to his assistants, I mean, I can't believe this. You know, I just found out Frankie Minnelli has, you know,
yeah.
a really bad cancer.
Yeah. Boom.
Boom.
Yeah.
On the internet.
Yeah.
So I wanted to avoid that. But, you know, by and large, there were no issues. But I'm ready to go back out on the road again with Quiet Riot. And I've made that very publicly and very clear. And we already have a number of dates for Quiet Riot for 2020 on the books.
Well, let's talk about some of that, more to talk about with Frankie Benali. Let's take a break right now. Frankie is here, and it's great to see him. And he brought me this nice bag of candy, which I think I'm going to try. Do you have a favorite of these? Have you had some of these?
Yeah, I like the green tea one a lot. The melon one is good. I mean, there are no bad flavors when it comes to Japanese Kit Kats. I mean, they're very precise about everything they do.
Are there any bad flavors when it comes to Eddie candy? Anything bad for you, Frankie? Really?
No. Not at all. It's good for the soul.
I'm going to try one of these things during the break. I don't know what flavor this is, but I'm going to have one. Got to take a break. We'll be right back with more with Frankie Benali on the Eddie Trunk Podcast after this.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Let's get back to more of my conversation with Frankie Benali right now on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Well, the Kit Kat was delicious. It really was. It was a dark chocolate is the one that I went with first. You know, I'm on the road more than I've ever been, Frankie, in the last 2-3 years. So I'm going to just carry this sack around with me through the airports.
There you go.
Whenever you need a little snack.
Watch out for TSA. They love Kit Kat.
TSA guy here at LAX sees me so much. Like your doctor. He's like, hey, Eddie, I'm a big fan. I could be bringing anything through there. He just wants to talk to me. Hey, let's do a stump the trunk or whatever. He's like, well, aren't you supposed to be checking my bag, dude?
This is when you know you've been to the Kaiser Hospital too many times. In every hallway, I run into somebody that's either wheeled me into a room, wheeled me out from a room, or did a procedure on me.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Every day. 10, 20 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the prognosis? What are the doctors telling you? How are you tolerating this chemo? I want to talk to you about other things.
Sure.
People have questions about what you're going through, but also about just music and Quiet Riot. So with the time, I'm sure you don't want to pound away on this, mm-hmm. but at the same token, I think it's wonderful that you're talking about it, that you've been public about it, you've been online talking about
yeah.
it, because in a lot of ways, I would think if there's people out there dealing with that are fans and mm-hmm. dealing with what you're dealing with, in a way, it's really inspirational to see what you're able to do still, and your spirit and attitude about going after this. I think it's wonderful. I think it's great you're public about it.
Well, I think it's important for people to understand that, first of all, if they have any inclination whatsoever that the cancer is in their family, they should really have themselves checked out, because I have done physicals with my doctor religiously for 20, 30 years, and nothing ever showed up. And I did my last physical in February of this year and no issues. And here comes April and I've got stage 4. It starts with stage 1, then stage 2, then stage 3, stage 4.
So it came on quick.
There's no stage 5. So it existed, but a physical didn't catch it. So you really need to insist on having a CT scan.
It is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've heard about pancreatic and what it makes it so difficult is there really aren't symptoms until it gets more advanced. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. As a matter of fact, a week or so before all of this started, I was in the backyard, and in one corner of the yard, there was all this construction material that had been dumped there by a previous owner years ago. And it was such a beautiful little area that was marred by about 250 paver stones, 10 cinder blocks, 50 or 60 bathroom tiles, and about 15 huge flagstones. And I moved all those by hand from one end of the yard over behind the greenhouse, you know, where, you know, stacked them all nice and neat and clean them all up. So, yeah, no symptoms whatsoever. None.
Is there screening? Is there a proper screening for pancreatic cancer?
I don't believe that there is. What I believe you can do is if you do a CT scan, if there's any abnormalities, especially in the pancreas, and if it has moved over to any of the other organs, it's going to show up. I think probably doctors and hospitals are reluctant to order it because it's expensive. But, you know, if you can afford it or if you have the insurance, do it. It's worth doing it, because if I could have caught it at stage 1 or maybe stage 2, it wouldn't be as severe. Stage 4 is considered terminal.
Mm. Because my family has a history of colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I get screened, I get colonoscopies, and I talk about it. I talked about it on TV. It's important to let people know, like you said, we're all getting older. You got to get out there. You got to get screened. You got to get checked out. So I get my colonoscopies every 2-3 years. Doctor tells me to go. I go do it.
Sure.
My mom had leukemia. My mom was cutting the lawn,
mm-hmm.
pushing, you know, my mom's, you know, old school, you know, she's, you know, old Italian woman. She's,
that's what you do.
She's cutting the lawn. You know, I want to cut the lawn. And yeah. I was like, she got the call. She's got leukemia. Yeah. And the doctor said, what are you doing right now? She said, well, I was outside cutting the lawn. He said, you're doing what? So you're not supposed to be able to do it. But, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, it hits you. And obviously you've got to deal with it. So look, being honest, you're dealing with the most severe thing you could be dealing with, stage four, at a cancer that is obviously extremely brutal.
Yeah.
You're getting chemo right now. You have a great spirit about you, that you're fighting this thing. What are the doctors telling you? Is this working?
Well, my oncologist at a recent visit said that the tumor in the pancreas has shrunk some. So that was positive. There was no more fluid in my lungs. And that there are a lot of the problems with the liver, they didn't see anymore, except that there's two areas there that they have some concern, which is why just this week I did another CT scan, and I'm waiting for the results to come back on that. My regular doctor called me up because she came in to see me after chemo one when I was still in the hospital. And I looked like death warmed over at that point, because the first chemo was very brutal on my system, and she couldn't, you know, she couldn't believe it. And she called me up last week because she follows all my reports that come from the different technicians and my oncologist. And she says that the improvements that I've made are nothing short of a miracle. And I attest that obviously to the treatment that I'm getting, but also my diet, because thank God my wife Regina got me off years ago from being a complete and total Italian carnivore, to being a vegetarian.
Well, that's interesting, because you're saying Italian carnivore, and you and I have talked about this before, and you've been nice enough to say, I got to make you a nice pasta one of these days. And I grew up, my mom's Italian, a very hardcore Italian family. I grew up in a Italian liquor deli store.
Mm-hmm.
My vice in life, as a predominantly Italian background, is carbs, is pasta and bread.
Sure.
You're saying you were a big meat guy, huh?
Yeah.
So the bruschetta, the meatball, the sausage, all that?
Also buco. I mean, you know, all the way down the line. So my father was born in Sicily, and he loved to cook.
Yeah.
So it was authentic, and I learned from him. My mother was born in Spain, and she loved to cook, and everything is authentic, and I learned from her. At least four times a week, we had pasta at the house when I was a kid.
But with the meatball.
And the sausage.
Right. Yeah. So that's where the carnivore aspect comes in.
Yeah. And then the other 3 days of the week would be something Spanish, which, you know, was more carbs, rice and the beans and the fish and this, that, and the other.
But the thing for you was the meat. So mm-hmm. you knocked out, you became a vegetarian when?
I don't know how many years ago it was, but I can't even remember how long ago it was, because it's been that long. But, you know, now I use a lot of the Beyond Meat products. So I make very believable meatballs, very believable Italian sausage sandwiches. Yeah.
But do you believe that the amount of meat had some relation to getting sick?
Well, I think if you're
eating... 'Cause you're saying you stopped a long time ago.
Yeah, I think... Well, what I'm saying is that I think it's helpful for my recovery, that I'm not eating meats and chicken or pork, you know, any fowl that for the most part have all these different, you know, things added to the food that they're intaking.
But have the doctors told you that? I mean, everybody makes a personal decision on how they want to handle their health. But have the doctors told you that? In other words, if you...
It's a plus, yes.
It's a plus.
It's definitely a plus.
For what you're dealing with, that's a positive.
Yeah, it's definitely a plus. And I think the other thing is having... You know, being able to assess your particular situation, and once I did that, you know, I'm very aware that you know, cancer, there's no cure for it. So I know that cancer will be the death of me. The question is when, and I think having a very positive attitude is very helpful. Yeah, it's okay to have your down days, because I have them. You know, it's okay to be depressed about it, but it's not okay to stay there. It's more important to continue to live your life. Not just for yourself, but for your family members and your friends, so they're not, you know, they're not sitting around getting depressed because you're depressed, or going on Facebook and having, you know, Death Watch 2019 or Death Watch 2020. So it's very important to be positive and realistic. I'm not I'm not a pessimistic or optimistic person. I'm a realist. I deal with facts as they're presented to me. Mm.
Frankie Benelli is my guest, and we want to talk about some stuff with music and the band as well. And I have people, you know, people on the line that want to talk to you and ask you questions about Quiet Riot and about Wasp and about this and about that and so many things. We have probably about 20 minutes left to go, maybe 15 in the show. So let's do this. Let's get our last break taken care of right now. And then when we come back, we'll be clear sailing until, you know, about 3:55 Eastern time. And we'll try to squeeze in a few calls. I know a lot of people wanted to say hello to you and wish you their best. But last thing for me about this before we go to the break and take the calls. When this news came out, first person I heard about it from was Mitch Lafon, who does a podcast out of Canada. And he had posted something about it, and he told me about it a day before that, because he knew we were friends and all that. And then it started, like you said, the internet, boom, it just goes. What about the outpouring from the music community? How has it been? I know I tried to reach out to you like everybody did. It was probably overwhelming, I would think, right?
Yeah, in a very good and positive way. I mean, you know, my text messages, I mean, at one point my phone just shut down because it was just so many were coming in, private messages on Facebook, emails, everything, all the posts on Facebook. It's amazingly, I didn't expect it. I mean, it's amazingly wonderful and it warms my heart. And the fans really lift me up to continue the fight. So, you know, although it's happening to me as one person alone, there's a whole lot of people out there that that want to see a positive outcome, and it means the world to me.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting the way you've handled this, and I think it's a testament to you that you've handled this with such dignity and such class, and you are putting it out there, and you are fighting it, and you're taking all that love that you're getting from people and using that. But everybody does handle stuff like this in a different way. Every single day, I get a call to this radio show asking about Eddie Van Halen.
Right.
And there are a million rumors out there every day about him potentially dealing with this. We just don't know. Nobody really knows.
Sure.
But they say nothing ever. I mean, it's in TMZ land. Now it's just to the point where people see a picture of Eddie Van Halen and it's news. Because he's physically, there's a photo of him. And they say nothing at all. So they've taken that route. Mm-hmm. You obviously, after dealing with it internally for a little bit, decided to take the route to go public. And that was something that you felt was the best way to handle it for you.
Well, I mean, I think it was important for a couple of reasons. It was important because I received an awful lot of hate from people that were going to Quiet Riot shows and not seeing me play. And
like
all
you said, I got those calls here too.
Yeah, you know? and they were pretty mean spirited, you know. And I get it, I understand it because they went to a Quiet Riot show and there's some guy playing drums that's not me.
Well, yeah, so, and let's be honest, you're the guy. I mean, with all respect to the other members of the band, you're the guy with the history rooted in what everybody knows as the classic Quiet Riot, the mental health era.
I've been the constant since 1980.
Yeah, the documentary, everything.
Yeah, I get it, and I never responded to it. I never lashed out or anything because I knew that at some point I was going to have to go public. It was just a matter of when and how. And, you know, hopefully people now, you know, and especially those that were so incredibly critical of my absence, I hope they now understand that, you know, I wasn't sitting around at home, you know, collecting the money and getting fat. Yeah. It was a complete opposite.
I'm sure more people than understand that now for sure. Frankie Benelli is here. Let's get a couple quick calls for Frankie before we have to wrap up. We could go hours here, and hopefully we'll do another round when Frankie's schedule permits and I'm back out here. But let's say hello real quickly to Ricky in Maryland. Go ahead, Ricky. You're on with Frankie.
Hey, Eddie. Thanks for letting me get in here. Frankie, brother, I love you, man. And all the best wishes to you, your wife, Regina, your daughter. I've got a signed copy of your DVD here. I watch it, dude, all the time. I enjoy it just as much every time. And I've seen you a whole bunch over the years with all the good lineups, man. You know what I mean? And just all the best wishes to you. And I hope you beat the shit out of that crap, man.
Well, thank you so much. Now, let me let you know that personally, I really appreciate your support. It means a lot to me, and it gives me additional strength to continue this fight.
Thank you, Ricky, for the call. This is Joe in Louisiana. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Eddie. How you doing?
I'm good.
I just want to let Frankie know he's in my prayers every night along with his family. I kind of know what he's going through. I'm a little dumbfounded because I'm actually talking to Frankie Benali, one of my favorite all-time guys in the band. And I got through to you Monday night, and you give me grief about Def Leppard, if you remember that.
I gave you grief about Def Leppard?
Yeah, you cut me up because I waited 30 years to see him.
Oh, I was busting
Never
your balls because you had said
right.
you said he waited 30 years to see Def Leppard. I said they've been around since 1980. How'd you wait 30 years? Joe told me he was like 55. I go, how'd you miss the boat 35 years ago?
Don't feel bad. I've only seen him once, and that was 1983 at the Dortmund Pop Rock Festival. It's the first and last time I saw them. They were really good.
Joe, thank you. I'm just moving quickly because we want to get as many people in as we have so we can, because I have to end right on time, of course. This is Al, who's in Jersey. Hey, Al, go ahead.
Hey, Eddie, thank you, man. Hey, Frankie, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I've seen you many times over the years. I just want to say that this world is not ready for you to leave it yet. If anybody can beat the odds, you can. You've hurdled over many hurdles, and you got the strength, brother, man. All right? We need you to stay around for a long time, all right? That's all I really wanted to say, man. I love you, bro. And, fight the good fight, my friend.
Well, with your support, I intend to be around as long as I possibly can and continue to entertain you with my loud drumming.
There you go. Thank you, Al. We're holding you to that, Frankie. We're absolutely holding you to that. This is Dell, who's in Pittsburgh. Hi, Dell. You're on with Frankie Benali.
Hi. What's up, guys?
Hi.
So I got a question for you guys, and it was, what's your favorite band that either opened up for you or you opened up for? It's good to see you're going strong. First time caller, and I'm 15 years old, big rockhead.
Wow, the next wave, the future generation, Dell in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So, Dell, thank you, Dell, for the call. So, the question is, your favorite band you ever opened for, or that opened for you?
Well, I got to be honest with you. We were fortunate enough. Choir Ride was fortunate enough in 1983 to support some of my favorite bands: Scorpions, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, ZZ Top, Black Sabbath. It goes on. And I can tell you that across the board, all those bands treated us with a great level of respect, and we never had any problems. And they were all great every single night. When we had, in 1984, we had Whitesnake open up for us, you know, that was like the dream version of Whitesnake with John Sykes on guitar and especially Cozy Powell on drums. And I got to become friends with Cozy. And that was a drum lesson every night. So in that regard, I have no regrets or no issues with any of the bands that we supported or any of the bands that supported Choir Riot. We've been very fortunate.
This is Raymond, who's in California. Hi, Raymond.
Hey, how's it going? Real quickly, I know you had done a lot of drum work with Wasp. Why is it that you never actually joined the band?
Well, the whole thing with Wasp started in 89. Blackie was looking for a permanent drummer, and I was busy with Choir Ride. We were working, actually this is 87, 88, we're working on the fourth Choir Ride album. And I said to Blackie, I can't join the band, but if you want me to do the record, I will. And so I did the Headless Children record, which is my favorite of the, I think, eight or nine I've played with Wasp. As it turned out, when I was in Tokyo, in 89, I decided that I wanted to put Choir Ride on hold for a while because it simply wasn't working with that particular lineup. And Blackie, I don't know how he found out about it, but I got a call from him, and he says, stay in Tokyo for another week, do press for the Headless Children, fly to London, and we'll start pre-production rehearsals the following week in London. And I did the world tour for Headless Children. But Blackie and I are really, really good friends. You know, we've had, you know, like any brother, you know, we had issues in the past that have all been put to rest long ago. But he's great. I just was never a permanent touring part of the band.
So we got about 90 seconds before I have to end. Anything that you want to say to the fans or on the air before we have to wrap up? Anything you want to mention?
Yeah, please know that, you know, the volume of messages that I've received across the board has been amazing for me. I have read them all. I apologize for not being able to respond to each and every single one because there's just not enough hours in the day. And I continue with my therapy both in and out of hospitals and private clinics. So my main focus is to get myself healthy and to continue to play drums with Choir Riot Live.
I speak for all the fans. We love you. We're praying for you. I've known you for a long time, man. We go way, way, way back. We really do. And I say with all my heart, I love you. I really do. And,
well, you're a true brother to me.
Well, same here. And I'm honored and thankful that you took the time out. I know with what you're going through to be here with me today and spend some time talking to me in the audience. And I got a lot of confidence in you, man. You're a fighter. And I got sending nothing but the best vibes out to you, my brother.
Well, I'm at your service anytime you need me for anything at all.
Likewise, here too.
Thank
know
you.
That, here too.
I love
Frankie
you,
Frankie Benelli, everybody. I love you, Frankie. Thank you, buddy.
All right, brother.
Well, a very moving interview, and I cannot thank Frankie enough for dealing with what he's dealing with, still coming in and doing that interview with me. As you heard, he was literally getting chemo at the time of the interview, and I mean, the guy's a trooper and a fighter, and you can do nothing but root for him and think of him and pray for him for a quick recovery from this. It is a bitch what he is dealing with. It is the absolute worst, but he seems to have a great spirit and a great attitude about it, and anyone will tell you dealing with stuff like that, that is a big part of it as well. So we will be thinking of Frankie. We'll keep you posted. We'll keep pulling for him and hopefully get good news on his prognosis in the near future. My thanks to Frankie Benelli, also his wife Regina, for bringing him in. It was a great conversation we had there at the SiriusXM studio in Los Angeles. And if you missed, you just heard it, but if you want to see video of it, it is available. We shot the whole thing, and there is video on the SiriusXM app. So be sure to check that out. We're putting a lot of video content up there of a lot of these interviews being shot as well on the app. Remember, if you are not a SiriusXM subscriber and you're in the U.S. and Canada, we're in a free listening period right now. So the inactive radios are on, and you can also listen if you don't have a radio on the app. Trunk Nation, my show is on every day, 2 to 4 Eastern live, replaying every night, 10 to midnight. And all the stuff is on the app as well. So be sure to have a listen in the free trial period, a chance to check out some of the music and some of the shows, my show being a talk show. But you can check out all sorts of stuff during this free listening period. So have a listen and enjoy and hopefully come on board with us if you are not already a subscriber. That's where the interviews you hear on the podcast every week originated from. You only get a small sample here on the podcast of what I do on a daily basis. Be sure to follow me on Twitter, at Eddie Trunk. Instagram as well, at Eddie Trunk. EddieTrunk.com is the official online home. There is a fan page on Facebook as well. And if you are in Erlanger, Kentucky, just outside of Cincinnati, December 14th, I'm at Peacock's. December 20th, I'm at Dingbats with Don and Jim for the annual That Metal Show Christmas Party, Clifton, New Jersey. And don't forget, just announced December 12th, I'm back at the Rainbow in LA for the Trunk Nation Christmas Party. Live from the patio at the Rainbow, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific time. Live on volume, SiriusXM 106. Free to get in if you're in Southern California. Come join us for some holiday shenanigans. Should be a blast. You guys have a great, great holiday weekend in the U.S., and I'll be back next Thursday for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, free, as always, Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. We'll be right back.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.